Hey guys, welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. This week I've got Brandon Leibel, is 28 years old, originally from New York, and he started SandCloud, which is an incredible company. And they went on Shark Tank after 4 years of pitching and continuing to email. They went on Shark Tank in February of 2017, where they ended up getting an investment from one of the sharks on Shark Tank. So I have him today on This Is Life Unfiltered to tell me all about his story, working a corporate job, and now having two other founders who we founded this company with that gives back to so many people and has a little bit to do with Turkish towels. You guys who follow me know that my sister actually lives in Turkey, which is really cool. So I'm quite familiar with Turkish towels. But before I get into it, make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered on social media at This Is Life Podcast and my personal social media as well, which is at Alexa_Curtis. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've had quite a story here. I want to know how you started this and most importantly, all about your childhood and how you got into entrepreneurship.
So I was born and raised in Long Island, New York. Two brothers, grew up in a very normal middle-class town in Long Island. Grew up, so my mom's Persian, my dad is white. So I kind of had a very interesting polarizing family experience with my dad's side being very corporate, 9-to-5, anti-risk, and then my mom's side being very Persian and risk tolerant and entrepreneurial and all about business and working for yourself. So I saw both sides. Went to college in San Diego, studied film and new media. I originally wanted to go to LA and make movies and write and produce. And in college, that was pretty much what I did. I did creative writing and I did a lot of event planning. I worked for the school planning events like concerts and DJs. And then after graduation, I decided I wanted to stay in San Diego. So I got a job at a life insurance company selling accidental death insurance over the phone. So it's not even really life insurance. It only covers you if you die of an accident. And hated it, was miserable. Luckily, I worked with a bunch of friends there. It was about like eight of us in this call center. It's kind of like a mix between Office Space and Workaholics. And that's where that's where I had the idea for the pillow towel with my Steven, who's now my co-founder. And after a year at this job, decided to quit and walk the beaches of San Diego trying to drum up this brand.
Something I think that everyone should know is you guys actually donate 10% of your profits to charitable organizations that aim to protect marine life, including the Marine Conservation Institute and the Pacific Marine Mammal Center. So tell me what kind of the environment interest you and why I feel like from what I've seen, that's such a big push with the company. Was there kind of one thing that happened or something you saw that really made you realize how much the environment needed help and needed kind of sustainable product?
Yeah. So since day one, since we didn't have any money to start the business, we started by literally walking the beaches in San Diego, approaching people and having them follow us on Instagram. And from day one, we realized, and we all agreed that having a social mission would help us gain loyal followers that are buying into the mission and not just the products. Because we felt like after watching Tom's, which was a company that we really looked up to, have such a huge impact and really, you know, become a viral sensation, we thought that that was the way to go. So we picked marine life because living in San Diego and living in the beach community of Pacific Beach, it felt right. Pairing it with our initial product, which was a towel. And to be honest, none of us are experts in marine conservation. None of us really knew anything about it except that, you know, people are passionate about it. There's a ton of nonprofits on social media that don't really have a huge voice because it's really hard to get people's attention. So we thought that if we can grow a brand and grow a following that we can then leverage that and give the experts that know what's going on, give them a platform to reach an audience that wants to learn.
When you first had this idea and you were kind of going on the beach and introducing this idea to people, what did you first learn as an entrepreneur? Because so much of this journey, and now you guys are so successful, has a lot to do with rejection, which is something that I talk quite often about. But I want to know how you maybe overcame that rejection in 4 years of wanting to get on Shark Tank for it to finally happen. How did you deal with that while things were still building?
Yeah. So, I mean, rejection is really like, that's the name of the game. Like every no, you're closer to a yes. That was kind of how we approached it. I mean, at the end of the day, we got so many no's every single day that it just became funny. And we would just help each other get through it. When it was the three of us working together and all facing the same, you know, the same criticism and the same questions and the same denial, it was easy for us to just group as a team and understand that if we just kept growing our Instagram, even though we weren't getting any sales, that eventually it would lead to sales. So we just set little goals, like let's get to 100 followers, like let's get to 500, let's get to 1,000. And then before you know it, we have 50,000. But yeah, we definitely encountered a lot of no's and a lot of denials along the way. But it was really just having a great partnership that we were able to overcome it and look at the little wins that we were getting along the way.
I want to step back a bit and go a little bit more into high school and college for you and how that time impacted the business decisions you've made now. But what kind of person were you like in high school? Did you have that entrepreneurial spirit, or were you kind of just focusing on, you know, wanting to go to college and work a 9-to-5 job?
Yeah. So I think that I never wanted to work a 9-to-5 job. I know that for a fact. I didn't like listening. I didn't like taking direction. I didn't like being told what to do. I hated camp. I hated a schedule. I hated organized events where I had to be at a certain place at a certain time. I was just that kid who just didn't like that. I was kind of entrepreneurial, but mostly creative. It was with a lot, you know, me and my cousins were always making home movies. We're always filming, always getting into trouble, going around town and, you know, causing mischief, throwing water bottles at people, throwing water balloons at people and filming it, which just whatever was going to create emotion and unleash creativity. So I think that was, you know, that kind of held true through college, majoring in film and trying to go to, you know, become a filmmaker. But at the end of the day, I think it was just the way I was raised, being around the different family characters that I grew up with. It just definitely molded my personality and I never wanted to sit behind a desk. That was my main thing.
Yeah, yeah. What were your parents like? I mean, did they support this when it started, or were they happy when you were kind of doing the insurance career path?
I really still can't even really tell. It was hard. It's hard for me to remember exactly their reaction. I know that my dad is a corporate guy. He's taken the train from Long Island to New York City every day for the last 30 years at the same time working a corporate job. And then my mom raised three kids. She's part-time work here and there. So I know my dad was a little worried, but at the same time, I think what he saw in me was kind of what he wished he had, which was, the fearlessness and the ability to take risk. And I think that he definitely was proud of that. And he did encourage me, but, you know, he was worried like any parent is. But, you know, they were fine. They didn't really, I was so young when we started this that I think they just figured, hey, if he falls on his butt, he's only going to be 24, 25. He'll get a job.
This was kind of the first idea you guys had though, right? I mean, you hadn't started any company that would become like this when you were that age. So if you guys were going to potentially fail or it wasn't going to work out, I mean, at the beginning, you didn't really have too much on the line.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had no experience. None of us knew anything. I still don't know much. We're learning as we go. I mean, we taught ourselves everything from YouTube videos to reading books and then just flat out failing and then figuring out where we went wrong. And then we were so young that we didn't have families. We didn't have kids. We still don't. The biggest thing I had was college debt and living expenses. So I put the college debt on hold, which you can do. If anyone's listening that has college debt, you can just pretty much tell the government that you're not making any money and then they'll leave you alone for a little bit. And we all moved in together, cut our expenses, and then just did it. You know, you sleep on the floor for a few years and then, you know, you can get to a place where you have a bed.
That's pretty interesting that you say the college debt thing. I didn't personally go to college, but I'm curious how the college experience for you made you know more about entrepreneurship? I mean, how did you decide what to study? And going into college, was debt something you were thinking about?
To be honest, I didn't even, my dad was so like, he was so hands-on when it came to going to college, because he knew that I wasn't proactive in looking for colleges. And all I knew was that I wanted to go to California, because I wanted to get as far away from what I knew for college, just so I can, you know, spread my wings and really see what happens. So I didn't even know I was going into debt when I started college. And then my dad told me as the years went on, hey, you're going to graduate, you're going to have debt, go get a job, start paying it off. But I'm definitely happy I went to college, but I don't think that in this day and age, it's necessary by any means. I mean, you're proof of it. So college was great as far as building a social foundation and making friends and learning about budgeting time and all that stuff. But as far as tangible skills, I didn't learn a thing in college.
What did you study?
I studied television and film. So I guess, you know, I didn't take business classes. I didn't take accounting classes, but I'm pretty sure that that statement stands true there as well. I mean, the only way to learn business and learn about being an entrepreneur is by doing it.
You took a completely different route then, going from studying that, which I know you did mention at the beginning of the episode, to then running this company. But was there anything you took away from college? I mean, that's 4 years of your life when you think about college. So that's a chunk of time. But was there anything that you walked away from that really helped you in your entrepreneurial journey now, or not really anything?
I mean, as far as telling a story, I think in being a film major, a lot of the classes were about telling a story, how to evoke emotion. So I do use that every day when it comes to building the brand and storytelling. I definitely get to use that. I definitely get to use SoundCloud as a way to express myself creatively. So there is some crossover there. But as far as being an entrepreneur, no.
That's so funny, because that's what I hear from so many people, is that none of them walked away from college getting any tools. But I mean, did you even make any like solid connections? Was any part of college helpful? Because I talk so much about college and whether or not young people should go. And I feel like community college nowadays is just as good for figuring out what you want to do. But I guess my question is, if you hadn't gone to college, do you think that you still would have been a part of SoundCloud and been a part of this idea? Like, did you at least learn about yourself being in college?
Oh yeah. No, I think college is great. There's no, I'm going to send my kids to college. Like, I'm not going to force them to go, but I'm going to tell them that it was great for my social development. Like, I made a lot of my friends that I met in college are still my best friends today. I met Steven, who's my business partner, in college. We graduated college together and moved to the beach and started our careers in the cubicle world. And that's where we decided that this isn't for us. So I definitely think that going to college, it helps you meet people that are then going to be with you for the rest of your life, and it's going to influence your decisions. But as far as sitting in a classroom and having a professor lecture to you, none of that did anything for me.
Yeah, that's what I think too. The lectures to me are so intimidating. I can't imagine being in college and like listening to these lectures. So I'm so fascinated by people who can do it. So when you're in college, and then what point and what year did you leave then? And then when was SoundCloud kind of the beginning start of it? And what was that first year like?
So we graduated, me and Steven graduated in 2012, and then we moved to the beach. So we graduated in May of 2012. We started working, I believe, in 2013 at the insurance job in San Diego at the call center. And between starting the job and graduating, I told Steven the idea of the initial product that launched everything, which was the pillow towel. And it was a basic concept. It was pretty much a beach towel that has a pillow inside. And this came to be because we used to go to the beach all the time. And it was just an idea that I had that I told Steven, and we kind of came together on it. Like, yeah, let's do this. This sounds like a $1 million idea. The only problem was we had no idea where to even start. Like, we were just so clueless on how to start a business, how to use a brand. I don't think either of us even had Instagram at the time. Like, nothing, everything was so foreign to us because we just graduated college. We were like two lost puppies. So we're just like, between graduating and the insurance job, we kind of like half-heartedly tried to get something going. Nothing happened. The biggest thing that happened was that we named our quote-unquote company, we named it Cloud9. So we had a company called Cloud9, which was a pillow towel. So we start the company and we start making money, and then we totally forget about Cloud9. Nothing's happening. We're finally making money for the first time. We're meeting all these people. We're going to Vegas. We're having fun. Everything's great. And then fast forward about 8 months in is when the toll of sitting behind a desk at this soul-sucking job selling a product that we hated kind of started really sinking into our soul and corrupting us, that we went back and like, okay, we have this thing that we started. We haven't talked about it in a while. Let's do something. But then the same problems came up. Like, what do we do? We have no idea. We're 23. So that's where Bruno comes in, who is the third co-founder, and he was kind of the dad because he's 5 years older than us. So when we were 23, he was 28, which is a huge age difference at that time. We told Bruno the idea, and he actually bought the first sample that we ever made, which we thank him, which was amazing at the time because we made about 50 of these pillow towels at our local seamstress, and he was the first person that bought it. One day we're having a catch at the beach, and Bruno's like, hey, what's going on with that company, the Cloud9, like, are you guys doing anything? And at that moment, I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. Nothing's happening. We don't know what to do. We're frustrated. I hate my job, blah, blah, blah. And then Bruno all of a sudden just says, hey, why don't you just call it SandCloud? And then something like took over my body where I was so obsessed, and something just happened to me that I heard this name. I'm like, oh my God, that's it. So I drove over to pick up Steve, and I took him over to Bruno's house. We sat down in his living room, drew up a little contract, and we became a company right there. And that's where SandCloud was born.
Wow. So when you were working in this corporate environment, were you guys kind of the guys who just were like walking in and were so miserable and just really unhappy with your job? Was there any part of this job that you liked at all besides obviously the paycheck?
I mean, the only thing that we liked was that we got to work with our friends, but that didn't last. And it was at the 8 month mark, it became just a miserable experience. And we dreaded every second of it.
So what advice would you have for people who are perhaps in the same spot? They maybe want to be entrepreneurs or not work for somebody else, but they're stuck in this job that they're really unhappy with. I mean, you could have easily just left and found another corporate job that you probably would have liked.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And I'm not bashing corporate jobs at all. Like, I don't want anyone to think that. I'm just saying that our experience, we had such a bad experience. It was a horrible company with horrible managers, and just, it was soul sucking that it was such a turnoff that it led me down this path. But if you work in a cubicle right now and you don't want to work in a cubicle at all, then you should reevaluate, you know, your next steps. You should maybe, you know, quit your job, go move in with a friend, cut your expenses, find a product, try to sell it, learn Amazon, use all the tools that are free for everybody in the world to figure out how to earn an income on your own terms.
Hmm. True. Very interesting. So do you think that you could become an entrepreneur overnight, or do you think that that term is thrown around so much? Because I feel like the word entrepreneur and hustling is thrown around so often all of the time now. And I don't necessarily think that, I mean, in a sense, you did become an entrepreneur also overnight, but it took you a period of time for you guys to have this one money idea.
Yeah, I almost think that being an entrepreneur it's become so commercialized, that term, that people forget what it even means. I mean, everyone has a different definition of what it is, but mine is the ability to, and the desire to kind of do things on your own terms and create something that's going to then build a certain lifestyle that you want.
Yeah, true. So that first initial idea with the towel and the pillow, I mean, that's pretty specific. Was there something about the pillow addition to it that you wanted versus just a towel?
I mean, it was just pretty much just trying to build a more comfortable beach towel, because we thought that, hey, like everyone in San Diego, every girl in San Diego and guy goes to the beach and lays out in tents and they put under their head their backpack or they make a sand pile. Why not just have a pillow in there?
That's pretty, yeah.
Make it more comfortable. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the idea. The idea wasn't great, first of all, because we don't even sell that product anymore. That shows you how good it was. Mm-hmm. It was that me, Steven, and Bruno were so determined to never go back to the cubicle that it didn't matter what the product was, we were going to make it work. Whether we die doing it or not, like we were going to die for it.
Yeah. I think that's such a great point you bring out, because entrepreneurs, and what people don't realize about entrepreneurs is that obsession with becoming successful, regardless of all of the factors out there that are going to bring you down, including the rejection, including the lack of money. If you're like, I really think a true entrepreneur, all of those things are completely overlooked. Whereas if you're not really that born and bred entrepreneur, you're thinking more about how am I going to pay for this? Or like, how am I going to pay for that? So I feel like it's those personality traits that really set entrepreneurs apart from not entrepreneurs. But these towels that you guys sell are really cool. They're sold for between $40 to $47 on the site. Can you clarify a bit what a Turkish towel is? Because I love Turkish towels, but these are not cheap towels. Like, these are not the kind of towels you would find at Walmart. So how did you come up with that price? And how did people start, like, at what point did people kind of start purchasing them once you started the company?
So we started by... So what we did, we found these towels on Etsy that we really liked, and this was before we knew anything about manufacturing. So what we did was, there was a contact tab on the specific page for towels, and we found out that the guy's contact was actually public, and it was this guy, it's this guy in Turkey who has a factory that makes Turkish towels. So we contacted him and got in contact, and we had to make some samples of these designs that we liked, and then we took those designs. We took like a handful of samples and a backpack. We walked the beaches of San Diego and we just sold them to people on the beach. That was our first. This was before we had a website. This was just to see if we can sell the towels.
What year is this?
This is 2014.
Okay.
So this is that summer.
Okay.
So we're just walking the beach and having a great time. At the same time as we're trying to sell these towels, what's equally important to us is building our Instagram account. So we're walking up to hundreds of people every single day and literally having them take out their phone and add SoundCloud on Instagram. So this was it was like kind of guerrilla marketing and just pure aggressive sales tactics that we did for, you know, months at a time. So we equated the followers to future sales because we knew that We didn't even have a website yet, so we weren't bringing in revenue, but we were acquiring followers, which we equated into future earnings, if that makes sense.
What was it about Turkish towels? Because for those who don't know, I mean, how do you explain a Turkish towel? It's like a, can you explain more specifically about how it differentiates itself from a regular towel? Because they really are quite different.
Oh yeah, they're very different. So Turkish towels are, it's premium cotton that has extra long fibers, and they're made of this unique material because they're even what makes them unique is they're softer, fluffier, and more absorbent than traditional bulky towels, and they're very compact, so they're easy to travel with. And Turkey is known for garments and towels for as long as they've been around. I mean, Turkey is almost a pseudonym for towels, and we chose that because we just felt like it carried the most weight as far as credibility, and we knew that our audience would respect that as far opposed to traditional towels.
Got you. So what was it about wanting to purchase somebody else's towels and sell them that appealed to you? Because that's pretty interesting to do. I mean, that definitely is guerrilla marketing, but were you making any money then? How many towels did you buy up front on Etsy?
So we didn't actually buy the other person's towels. We had the supplier that had listed those towels make towels for us.
Got it. So did you negotiate with him the prices at this time? Like, did you tell him, here's how much I can spend? Or did you just kind of get a quote from him? I mean, basically, how did you have money going into this? Because Turkish towels are not cheap. So was it money you had made from the job? Did you have like an initial angel investor or money you had saved up?
So none of us had money except Bruno. Bruno was 5 years ahead of us. So he had been working in the corporate world for a number of years before we entered there. He had stock money. He had some investments. And it's not even that substantial. I think he had like 20 or 30 grand. And he made the initial investment into buying the inventory. And then me and Steven, we really had no money other than the little money that we saved up from the insurance job. And then I had like $3,000 in my 401k that I actually took out, which the banker, I'll never forget the banker looking at me and thinking I was literally retarded for taking out my 401k money at 22 years old.
Oh my gosh. Were you nervous? Like when you went to do that, I mean, was there any part of you that not at all, you were just like, I'm going to go for it.
I was so disgusted with the life that people were okay with, which was sitting at this awful job, that I was actually like, I was just so excited to go get that money because I was not going back. This was it, or I'm going to do something, or I'm going to move out of the country and live on a beach somewhere. Like I'm not going back to the corporate world.
Not that corporate world is bad, but it's just not for most people. I want to make that really clear that like, if you work a corporate job, it doesn't matter what job you work, whether you run your own company or you work corporate, it just depends if you like that job or you're happy in that job, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I sound like I'm taking a dump on the corporate world, but it's not. There's a ton of corporate jobs that are amazing, I'm sure. It wasn't for me. And like I said, our experience, it's a very personal experience that we had, was just that bad. Think about making 300 cold calls a day on an automatic dialer headset, selling accidental life insurance to people in the middle of the country for $10 a month, and then going on a script, following a script that you have to read verbatim, and walking them through the process, which at the end you get their credit card.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it's awful.
It was horrible.
And I think that if you really are unhappy in your job, it's really easy to either find another job, but I wouldn't also say that you should jump the gun and like take out all your savings. I mean, as an entrepreneur myself, I think that's like fantastic. That's something I would totally do, but I just want to make it clear for people who are listening that like, you don't have to do that just because other people have been successful doing that. Like there's ways to also not jump the gun in that sense, just because you're so passionate about something. But if you are, then it's also great. So you guys created this contract, then you said all three of you, what was in this contract? Because as three people who are not entrepreneurs, like how did you know even what to put in this contract initially?
It was literally scribbled on a piece of paper. The first one, it was just agreeing that we're all in business together. The more formal contracts came later when we actually were making sales. Because until you're making sales, you're not worth anything.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter at the beginning. So it seems like there was definitely a lot of things that you would have learned over that period of time. But I want to talk a little bit about the social media aspect to this company, because you started it right when social media was kind of like at the forefront of just beginning to launch. But how do you think that social media has played a role in the success of the company?
Well, without social media, there's no SoundCloud. Let's put it that way. It was everything. I mean, because since we having no money and having social media available was beautiful because it's free and it only takes insane amount of hustle and repetition and hard work to grow something on social media and actually build the company from scratch. So, you know, it was amazing. You know, using Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and every platform that's readily available to everybody is what enabled us to become SoundCloud. Because with that, since if you have no money, you really have no other choice.
Yeah, but this was before also the days of where you could swipe up or where there was a lot of like Instagram advertising, right? I mean, I think back in 2014 that they weren't necessarily having the button to like promote posts or do stories. So how did you utilize Instagram before it really became Instagram?
So I actually think that it was better back then because A lot, because with Instagram, the algorithm has changed so dramatically these past few years that it's making it way harder to grow. So, for example, back in 2014, there was no limit on how many people you can comment on and direct message. And then fast forward 2 years later, Instagram changes their algorithm and has stricter rules. Eventually you get blocked sending DMs and sending messages. Mm-hmm. So when we first started, and we would call this process hand plucking, because we would find accounts, we would find sorority accounts and fraternity accounts across the country, and we would stay up, the three of us, all night, direct messaging every single person that we can come across on Instagram and tell them about SandCloud, tell them our mission, and then send them a promo code for their first purchase.
And how were you successful with that?
Yeah, so just with that approach, we did $430,000 in sales by just doing that.
Was the promo code something for free, or was it a discount on an item?
It was a discount.
It was, and what was the discount? Because that's a massive amount of sales for like a discount code. I know when somebody DMs me and is like, get X amount off this, and like, fuck no.
Yeah, well, now it's become so widely saturated that it's... Exactly. But like I said, timing is everything. We got in at the right time where no one was really doing what we did at the scale we did it. And I think the discount was 25%.
Wow. And it was mostly sorority girls you were going after. So you weren't messaging like Kim Kardashian and whatnot.
No, no.
How did you decide on sorority girls?
We just took a hard look at, you know, who we thought our market was. And we thought that, you know, girls are more into, you know, pretty towels, and they're more into the beach, and they're more into the environment, and they're more of the consumers as far as shopping. So we just pinpointed, you know, the millennial sorority girl, and I think we messaged every single sorority girl in the country.
That's amazing. So this might be a hard question to answer, but in terms of social media, and for somebody right now who has an idea, every time I do a college talk, I get so many questions afterwards that's like, I have an idea for a jewelry company, and I have 1,000 Instagram followers, and like, I don't know what to do about it, and I don't know how to get the word out about my company on social media. You would know the answer better than me. So what is your answer to that question?
How to get the word out on social media?
Yeah. You know, say that you have an idea for like a shoe company or something really random, and you want to utilize social media, but you have, you know, no really social media following, and there's so much competition out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I will be the first one to admit that it is harder today than it was 5 years ago, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means you have to be a little more savvy, and you have to just tell a really authentic story and make people feel special. And you have to do that on a large scale every day forever. and you can't take a day off.
Do you think that going the route with writing a bunch of DMs and like figuring out your target market and then from there writing DMs is a good way to do it? Or should you be like promoting posts?
I would do both. I mean, we didn't know anything about promoting posts or Facebook advertising or sponsored ads. Like, that didn't exist to us when we were doing this. We just knew that, okay, we can reach these people for free through Instagram. Let's triple down on it and all focus on it for 8 hours a day.
So really just the true definition of hustling.
And not only that, we had virtual assistants overseas also doing it at the same time. So at a given time, we had about 10 people messaging every single millennial female in the US.
That's incredible. Wow. So when you started this company, what was the first sale that you got? Was it from the marketing that you were doing on social media? Was it kind of like something that happened overnight where you had DM'd all these people and then all of a sudden you woke up and had like $100,000 in sales, or no?
Oh, no. Not, first of all, nothing happens overnight. We didn't make a single sale, I think, for like a year and a half. Other than maybe, you know, an older lady on the beach buying one of our towels because she felt sorry for us. I don't think we actually sold more than 3 towels on the beach. And then one of our other lucky breaks was, so to make money and to survive, I drove for Uber and I would Uber in between working and doing my Instagram work. So I would be sitting at my desk in my apartment, and I would have my Uber app on. I would take a few rides. I would make my $80 to $90 for the day, and then I would go back to work for SoundCloud. And one Uber ride, I picked up a reporter for Channel 5 News, her and her boyfriend, and midway through the ride, I found out she's a reporter, and I'm like, okay, I need to get her phone number and information. I got to get on the news. Like, this is an opportunity for us. So I just get lost on purpose on the freeway heading downtown, and I spent a few more minutes with her, tell her about my company. She gives me her business card. A week later, she's interviewing us in our apartment about SoundCloud. The next night, we're on the news, and then that's the first night we get our first internet sales.
Wow. How many sales did you get after that one interview?
I think like 8.
Okay, so that's amazing. So it wasn't like 800,000, but 8 sales is better than 0 sales. So that's pretty awesome. I love that you said that you like went in the wrong direction. That's something that I would totally do. Do you think that kind of advertising is still just as good as like social media? Because nowadays people are like, oh, if they're on the TV, it's not as good as like being in a magazine or like on YouTube. But I feel like that marketing is especially hitting the market who definitely would have the money to pay for like $50 towels because they aren't super cheap.
Yeah, I think that TV is a horrible place to actually advertise unless I think the spectrum is just, it's so polarizing because like obviously a Super Bowl ad is insanely amazing, but a random commercial at a weird time on a weird show that no one's watching is kind of pointless.
Yeah, but I mean specifically with like the interview. So if you had the opportunity.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, we would. Because that's free, you know, that's free. So any free press that we can get, we're going to take, but we're not going to invest $20,000 on a TV ad when we could put that into Facebook ads. Cause the numbers speak for themselves and Facebook is just better. But yeah, I mean, at that time it was the greatest thing in the world. We were so happy to get any sales and just to be on TV because, you know, we were just every little win was like winning the Super Bowl to us.
Yeah. Every little yes is so much closer to like that big yes, which you got, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but tell me how you were exactly paying for things in between that year of time. Was it Uber? Is that what was really paying your bills?
Yeah. So it was a mix between Uber, credit card. Like we each applied for like 10 credit cards and I think we got approved for like 5 each. So we just had credit cards. We were just piling up debt just to survive and pay for services, pay for inventory, pay for furniture. And then it really came down to just not really living a lab. Like we weren't doing anything. All we were doing was working and driving Uber when, you know, on the weekends and, you know, just hanging out together, cooking together, eating beans and rice. So our living expenses were really low. So we just made it work.
And for that whole year that you really had no sales, I mean, what kept driving you to become successful? Because so many people, especially in that first 6 to 12 month period, would just give up.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, the only, like I said earlier, the way we kind of gauged our growth and our, you know, our little wins was growing our Instagram account like that. We knew that it wasn't bringing us direct income, but we just were overly obsessed with the fact like, hey, if we keep growing this number, if we keep getting followers, if we keep growing the brand, if we keep getting pictures of people with our product, eventually it's going to lead to money.
Absolutely. So then tell me about Shark Tank, because that was kind of, it seems like the big yes after that period of time. And the company wasn't even around for that long after you went on Shark Tank. But what was your initial pitch, if you remember? And any advice for people out there who have companies and are thinking like Shark Tank is the way to go? I mean, really, is it the way to go? Because the shark that you got to take an investment took 15% of the company, correct?
Yeah.
And that's not a huge amount, but it's definitely more than 5%.
Yeah, well, I mean, if someone is debating whether to go on Shark Tank or not, they just have to realize that getting on Shark Tank is not going to make you successful. It's not the end. It's not the silver bullet that you're looking for, because there's no silver bullet, and it's not getting on Shark Tank. I would guarantee that a majority of companies that actually got on Shark Tank are either not even around anymore, or will tell you the exact same thing I just said. Mm-hmm. And then two would be, if you can get on Shark Tank, just go on, because it's millions of eyeballs on you and your product for 5 to 10 minutes, and it's free. So go for it.
It's like that Super Bowl advertising, but yeah, it's free.
Exactly. It's free. It's not a million. It doesn't cost you $1 million.
I would think that with Shark Tank specifically, that there would be like an online casting call or something. You mentioned that you were emailing. So did you do just a ton of research and find somebody's like producer contact? I mean, how did you go about the traditional way that somebody would necessarily get on one of these TV shows?
So if you go to the Shark Tank website, there's public email address that you can email to apply. What I did was, I'm pretty sure, I don't even remember who I emailed at the very beginning, but I never got a response. I think the second or third time I submitted an application, I got a response from a producer who I then followed up with multiple times a year until we got on. So I would just say be persistent. There's always a way. Don't be discouraged by your first or second or third no. Just keep going. Show them that you're growing. Show them that you are heading in a good direction and kind of why you deserve to be on the show. Showcase your personality, because it's at the end of the day, it's a TV show. They want interesting personalities that are going to be entertaining for the viewers.
Yeah, of course. And obviously your guys' age was such a huge factor in probably putting you on there, just because you're so young and so successful. But you said that you emailed like 3 or 4 times, but that was over a period of 4 years.
You fill out an application every year, and the application is like 50 pages. So technically I applied 4 years in a row, but I would be following up with the producer throughout the year, just so that she keeps us on her mind. That was the main thing. Just it's all about, it's all about your last at bat. So I wanted her to know that I was thinking about Shark Tank, and I wanted her to be thinking about SoundCloud.
Yeah, that's great advice. So that one email that you got back that kind of said yes, what did that feel like? I mean, where were you when you got the email back that you got invited to go on the show?
There's like several steps of the interview process. So first I filled out the written application, and they liked what I said, and they wanted us to go to the next round, which is then we have to film ourselves at home, pretty much introducing ourselves, talking about our company. It's just us in our living room. And then we send it to them. They like that. Then they invite you up to LA, and you have to pitch the whole production team and the producers and pretty much the head of the show. And I'll be honest, I was more nervous for that than I was for the actual Shark Tank pitch. I was trembling. I was very nervous. Because I was in the back of your mind, you're like, oh my God, we got this far, but what if they don't like us? What if we stumble? What if we, what if we don't wow them? So luckily they liked what we did, and then we got invited to pitch the Sharks, and then you're still not even guaranteed to air. So that's in the back of your mind as well, because they overshoot, so that in case, some of the content is not up to their standards, they have backup. So you're not even guaranteed to get on TV.
Wow. So what's the timeline between getting asked? I didn't even know that there was like a pre-screening. And do they like assist you? I mean, say you're from like the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, do they pay for your travel to LA or no?
I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm really not sure. We're in San Diego, so we just drove up, but they put us in a hotel.
Okay, that's not bad. So what was that time period then between getting that email and then actually going on the show?
So after we pitched, September of 20, I want to say, damn, I'm actually forgetting my dates. I think it was actually of 2015. And then we didn't air until February of 2016. And I found out that we were going to air when I actually had just landed in Sydney, Australia, and I got to my hostel and I opened my laptop, and that's when I found out.
Wow. And so did you watch it live or no?
Yes. I came back from my trip early and we all watched it together, and it was really awesome.
And obviously you got an investment, a pretty hefty investment from that show. So congratulations, even though I know it was a little bit of time ago. But what is one thing you walked away from, maybe all of you, all three of you in the company, after appearing on that show?
There's no silver bullet. That's really it. I mean, people think getting on Shark Tank or meeting this person or meeting that person is going to make you a sustainable success. And it's just not true. So that's what I walked away from. It's that you can't stop going. Like the second you start declining.
Yeah.
We thought, oh my God, Shark Tank, we're going to get on Shark Tank and we're going to be unstoppable. We're golden forever. I mean, it was great. Shark Tank is amazing. It put, you know, the platform was great. We got in front of millions of people that have never seen us, but you still have to keep working.
Yeah. What's the end goal for SoundCloud? I mean, I feel like a lot of people, that's what I think is so unique about your guys' entrepreneurship story and journey, is that a lot of people would think that's the end goal, like that's it. But what people are missing on that entrepreneurship thing is you get that big yes, and then it's like, say you guys just settled and the company runs on its own. I mean, it would be really freaking boring. Like, there's a reason why somebody like Mark Zuckerberg doesn't retire, is he would be so bored and so rich and have nothing to do with his money. But what's the end goal? I mean, where would you guys like to see yourself in 5 or 10 years?
Honestly, I mean, the end goal is just to, as long as we're happy doing it, you know, we want to be running this company and growing it and, you know, be able to donate more money to our mission, you know, team up with more nonprofits. And as long as we're having fun and we're happy and we're, you know, everything is good, you know, this is what we want to do.
Do you think at some point or another, you, maybe all three of you or just you, would start another company?
I could definitely see myself starting another company down the road, but it's hard to even fathom that right now, because I feel like we have so much further to go with SoundCloud. So it's a yes, but it's also, I can't give you a very, you know, strong opinion on that. I don't have a strong opinion myself yet, just because there's so much further to go with SoundCloud, and I feel like we're just getting started.
Yeah, no, I think that's so great that you say that. And I only ask that just because a lot of people from the outside might think like, oh, they're already set. What, you know, what's next? But I like that you say that. It's like, This is just the beginning, because it takes so, so, so long to become successful in any company ever. And do you think that social media, in a sense, sometimes glamorizes that entrepreneurship journey or what people or companies have built?
100%. I think people, when people hear millions of dollars in sales, and automatically they think that you're rich and you just sit by a pool and drink martinis all day. First of all, to make $1 million, you most likely had to spend a few hundred thousand just on advertising to make that million. And then you have overhead, you have cost of goods. So maybe you profit 50 grand. People don't realize that all these other expenses come into play in order for you to rack up that kind of revenue. So when people hear, oh, you did $10 million. Yeah, but it took me $9.5 million in all in cost to make that.
Interesting. What is your one piece of advice for young people out there who are listening and they have an idea and they don't know what to do? Like, what is the first thing that you do? And it's so interesting because every entrepreneur, like super successful or even just starting, always has a different answer to that. But is there one first step? Like, say you want to start a jewelry company or you want to start a shoe company, whatever consumer brand, what is the first step?
I guess knowing what I know now and, you know, all the trial and error and seeing what works, my first step would be to start building up your social media accounts right away. Even before you have samples, before you have a website, before you have a name, just start building a community. Because you can, if you don't do that, if you focus on, okay, I got to perfect the product. I have to perfect the website. I have to perfect everything else. Once you do all that and you don't have a community to tell them, you know, what you just did, you're not going to have anyone to sell to.
But what about in the old days when, I mean, the old days, like, you know, back in 1999 or 2000, when even like Tom's wasn't built on the platform of social media. So is there a way now to build a company without social media? I mean, how did these companies, and I don't have a consumer brand, so how did these companies do it in the past?
Well, I never said anything about, yeah, I said social media, but I also said community. Tom's focused all in their community. They focused on their mission. They focused on their why. Maybe it wasn't on Instagram or Facebook, but he had a community in which he built through word of mouth, which is even more powerful than social media. So I think the bigger thing is focus on building a community of people that believe in what you believe in, which is your mission.
And that, I guess, might mean going out and selling to people on the beach, or that might perhaps mean social media. But either way, as long as you're building that community organically, right?
Exactly.
Well, you are incredible, and I think that everyone should check out the towels as well as all the other accessories and clothing you have on the website, because there's so much online there, which is phenomenal. But where can everybody find you on social media as well as SoundCloud and stay up to date with what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so our website is just sandcloud.com, and our Instagram handle is sand_cloud. And yeah, I mean, we're coming out with new products all the time. We've expanded into clothing and accessories, and you know, it's a lot of eco-friendly based products, but yeah, that's where you find us. And you know, thanks so much for having me. I really had a great time.
I'm so excited for people to hear this episode, and I think what you guys have done and built so organically and so passionately is fascinating. So for those of you who are listening, the number one thing you need is passion. If you have passion and that drive in you, then that will make anything you're doing or any even corporate job you want to work successful, as long as you have the passion and the drive. But Brandon, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I can't wait to see where you guys are in 5-10 years. I can't even imagine.
Thank you, Alexa. Appreciate it.
Awesome. You guys will have an awesome week. Make sure to follow Brandon and SoundCloud on social media as well as This Is Life Unfiltered. Stay passionate, keep staying driven, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.